What's up, everybody? Today's episode is brought to you by The Gallery. Once again, our friends based right out of New York, The Gallery is a curated collection of photographs from around the world. While, like I said, we just can't be zipping around like our favorite anime characters to travel to any place we want to. That's why we have our friends at The Gallery to bring these pieces of the world straight to us and you. All of the prints are made from 100% recycled aluminum, giving your wall that sweet, sweet gallery finish. Right now, The Gallery is offering our listeners 15% off their purchase by using the code 15OFF. Go to thegallery.com, that's thegallery.com, so your wall will never be boring again. Now, enjoy the show. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another illustrious edition of your favorite and the number one anime and manga show out on the internet. Yes, you made it. You made it to Weebcast. Welcome on another Friday afternoon. I hope you guys are doing excellent. Excellent. I hope you got some water. I hope you got something to eat. But if you're not, you know, maybe you're driving to work. Maybe you're working out. Maybe you're just chilling at the house, watch some anime, you read some manga, you're taking a break, and you're like, you know what, I'm going to listen to Weebcast. I'm going to pop that in on that. You know, while I'm here, if I'm here on Spotify, listen to music, I'm on Apple, you know, I'm on Spotify, I'm on iHeartRadio, or, you know, Apple Podcasts, why not? Why not open up Weebcast? Let me see what my boy C-Dub is talking about. But yes, welcome. You've made it to the end of the week. Congratulations. Give yourself a good pat on the back. You did it, you know, and why not treat yourself? Why not treat yourself, at the end of the week, end of the work week, with a nice, good chunk of some great anime and manga discussion with yours truly? You know, I'm going to lead y'all to the promised land of logic and reasoning and this wacky world of anime and manga, and I'm going to do my best to do it. I've been doing it we're going to be hitting 30, I got 30 episodes, but the numbered ones, we're going to be hitting that for 30 episodes pretty soon. This is episode 29 right here. We're about to hit the 30 mark next week. But let me, have I been leading y'all correctly? The fearless leader, C-Dub, a.k.a. Moe, a.k.a. Chris, a.k.a. the independent variable. Have I been a good leader? I like to think so, I have. I like to think so, right? I think I've been a pretty good leader in this world of anime and manga, giving you guys the greatest content on the internet, and plan to give you much more. You know why? Because, ladies and gentlemen, I think this is the first time I'm announcing it. I've announced it on my live show, which you guys need to check out as well. Check out Weebcast Hangout on Podbean. I stream there for about an hour from Monday through Friday. 12 p.m. Eastern, for about an hour and some change. You can hear me talk about all kinds of things, about news. I take questions, callers, comments from Twitter and Instagram, and I kind of just chat really leisurely, not so much, a little less structured than the podcast episodes, the podcast show. So download the Podbean app, listen to your favorite podcast there, listen to my Weebcast Hangout live shows Monday through Friday at 12 p.m. Eastern. But I think I revealed it there. But I have not revealed it officially on the show here on Weebcast, the podcast show, the number one anime and manga show on the internet. Because now you can officially support this show on Patreon. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Weebcast has launched Patreon. So the Weebcast fam, the ones listening out there, you guys can now support this show. If you love what you've been hearing over this last several months, you've been loving the hot takes, you've been loving the anime and manga reviews, you've been loving the weekly manga corner, you've been loving my opening monologues, you've been loving the guests that I've been bringing on the show, then why not support the podcast officially on Patreon? And you can find it on patreon.com/weebcastshow. And I got three tiers there for you. Check it out. Check it out when you get the chance and support the show. Become an official Weebcast supporter. Become an official patron of the show. You get a lot of cool benefits. I'm going to be adding more benefits already to the tiers. I've already got a good bunch of benefits for the three tiers already. I'm going to be adding more. Bonus shows. You get to select topics, early episodes, shout-outs on the show, monthly AMAs. Join the private live shows on Podbean with me. I want you guys to feel connected to the show. I want to feel connected to you guys. And that's what the... And you can do that by supporting the show and make the show grow. And I want to grow with you guys. I want to help you guys. I hope you guys will help me grow. And so we can do better and cooler things on the show and have you guys feel connected. So do that. Patreon.com/Weebcast Show to become an official supporter of the show. I would love you to the end of time. I'm no cap. I'd love you. I would love you to the end of time. I'm telling you guys, but definitely check that out. But also, you know, check out the Instagram. We launched Instagram last week. It's at Weebcast TV. I post a lot of I post things. If you missed the show, I like to ask questions and give people's ideas and thoughts, feelings on different series, on different topics on Instagram. So check me out there at Weebcast TV, and also Twitter. I love Twitter. And like I said last week, yeah, you know, they suspended my main account, but at least I got the backup, which you can follow at Based Senpai on Twitter. It's just Based Senpai, BASEDSENPAI, Based Senpai on Twitter. Make sure you guys follow me. I mean, why not follow the coolest guy on any Twitter? You know, why not? Get my hot takes. Get a little sneak peek on what I do. What I should bring up. My Patreon, I try to post daily. I give you little snippets. I give you nice little insider knowledge of different things I like to do that I've been doing on the show. I just posted yesterday. If you're listening to the show on Friday, I just recently posted on my Patreon another post about some things I'm doing in the future. I have two posts on there. So if you guys become a patron, see what I'm talking about there, and you'll feel special. That's exclusive for you patrons. Like I said, it'll be getting all kinds of, you know, just check it out. Check it out. Patreon.com/Weebcast Show and all that good stuff. But I got a lot of cool things on today's show. I hope you guys will be able to stick around for me for some time. Like I said, get your water as I take an unprofessional sip of water myself. Refreshing. Refreshing. But yeah, we got some cool stuff on the show. I'm going to talk about a really cool anime and manga, Kaiji, in a few seconds. I'm going to be talking about Ghost Time Paradox Rider, a manga, then Shonen Jump, which has met an unfortunate end in the magazine. And then, obviously, at the latter half, your favorite edition, I mean, your favorite segment, my weekly manga corner. And on today's weekly manga corner, I'm going to be talking about three chapters that I picked out from this recent magazine, last week's Shonen Jump issue, and I'm going to tell you guys, you know, I like to tell on Weekly Manga Corner and tell you guys what you should be reading in the Weekly Manga Shonen Jump magazine, what's worth the time and what's not worth the time, and I'll get into that a little bit later in the show, but, yeah, I just want to jump right into it. Let's just jump right into it. Where is it, William DeFranco on YouTube? and that's with Kaiji. Because I think a lot of people, you know, people who, and I look at the demographics who listen to the show, a lot of you guys are millennials. From 18 to 35, a big portion of this show's listener base are from 18 to 35. And I love it. I love you guys. There's some people a little younger than that. And I got some viewers who are older than 35, which is absolutely amazing. And if you're older than 35 and you're listening to the show right now, I care about you too. And if you're under than 18 and you're listening to the show right now, I care about you. Okay? But Kaiji, so I don't want to cater to my 18-35 demographic, but Kaiji is an anime and manga series that eerily resonates with the plight of Americans, of millennial Americans, in the year of 2020. It'll make more sense in a bit. But let me start with this. Following, World War II, and then the end of the 1980s in Japan, they experienced what is called the economic miracle. And the country built itself up from the rubble of the war and really became one of the world's most powerful economies. But that came up to a very abrupt ending in the 90s, in the early 90s, when the Japanese economy pretty much stagnated. And stagnated pretty hard. The country's real estate bubble kind of just burst. Wages fell. Traditional jobs with salaries and benefits were replaced by low-paying temporary jobs. And the economy was a nightmare. It was just a simple nightmare to step out of school into. You know, the youth who graduated high school and college, during that time were still, to this day, are still reeling from the effects. And for Americans, starting to sound a little familiar, right? People who were, my age kind of remember about the economic crash that my country and America's fell in 2008 with its housing bubble. But this manga and anime series, Kaiji, which I absolutely adore, follows in a protagonist who graduated high school in 1993. And the series is drenched in just economic anxiety of the period, and which makes it just scarily relatable to every millennial in America, or a majority of millennials, I guess I should say. But for people who don't know Kaiji, I'm gonna get y'all hip on it. But it's a gambling manga and anime series by Nobuyuki Fukumoto that's been running since 1996. And the story follows Kaiji, a young man who's been reduced to just a listless, down on his luck, deadbeat, just by his, by the simple fact of his inability to find stable and steady work in the difficult 1990s Japan. But one day, Kaiji's visited by one of those loan sharks, the guys with the greasy, slick back hair, pinstripe suit, kind of talks with a wisecrack, always smirking, just a general asshole. Is that it? Or is that kind of too much of a caricature of loan sharks? I'm not sure what they do. But you guys know what I'm saying. And this loan shark informs him that he's on the hook for a large loan that he co-signed for a worker. And best case scenario, it'd take Kaiji 11 years to pay off this loan. And to pay off his debt, Kaiji goes through a gauntlet of high-stakes gambling games with rewards up to millions and millions of dollars, and punishments ranging from slavery to just death, to his life ending. I hope this, a little side note, I hope this anime and the manga gets a little bit more notoriety, not because after this episode of Weebcast, because I ain't got that kind of pull. This is the number one anime show on the internet, but, I ain't got that kind of pull to get an anime to resurge again. But you guys have the power. You guys have the power to do that. Talk about it. Tweet about it. Look at that. Maybe you might like it. You might not like it. But shows like Kakuragiri on Netflix, which has two seasons, which is another gambling show that I highly recommend. I thought the popularity of that show would get other shows like Kaiji and other manga and anime series of its ilk to, get some pop, get a little boost in popularity and searches and things like that, but not sure if it has, but the strongest arc, in the anime is the underground labor camp arc in the beginning of season 2. And so this is months after a disastrous loss to the Teiai group. Kaiji's in deeper debt than he's ever been. And it really doesn't look like there's any hope for him paying it back. And since he can't pay back in cash, Kaiji's abducted and put to work in this KIA group's underground forced labor camp. Yeah. It's pretty much a slave now. And prisoners there are tasked with constructing a massive nuclear bunker. I think they call it a kingdom of some sort, where even in a nuclear apocalypse, the wealthy can, you know, still enjoy their lives of luxury. But after the 90% cut that goes towards the debt repayment, room and board, Kaiji is only able to pocket just a little bit over 9,000 yen. And put that in for US dollars, that's only $85. So that's an entire month of just breakbacking labor. It's blood, sweat, and tears. You know what I'm saying? So, and I remember there's one scene where we have an angle of Kaiji. He's on his knees, head down, and he's just like, finally, a cold beer after an entire month of hard labor. But the night of his first payday, he's just balking at the sight of his other coworkers who are spending their money on just overpriced snacks. And Kaiji's goal is to save up every single penny for these 6 months they're going to buy a one-day pass to the outside world. And once out, you know, he was hoping to win enough money in debt and one day of gambling to just wipe his debt clean. But that man, my man's humbled. You know, he's humbled, and he learns just how foolish a mistake he's made and his mindset was. Because, you know, the small indulgences of beer and potato chips, you know, things like you and I like to indulge in, is what keeping these slaves at this labor camp going day to day. Or month to month. And denying oneself of these small pleasures take just superhuman willpower. And even if he saved up those for 6 months to get one day pass, just the idea of just trying to win enough money to clear his debt in just one day is ridiculous and absurd, even for a guy like him. But Kaiji's initial attitude is the same one that leads to people like you and I to blame the economic conditions of millennials on spending too much money on Starbucks, you know, McDonald's, that nice, slightly salty avocado on spread on a nice, lightly toasted piece of bread. On paper, you know, a couple decades of making your own coffee at home could eventually lead you to enough savings to put a down payment on a house, you know? But the real issue isn't people allowing themselves small treats in their lives. It's the larger system that keeps people trapped in a prison of just debt and poverty. Just a vicious, vicious, vicious cycle. But the work camp becomes an even more insidious when a visit to the camp's infirmary reveals that paying off the debt through work may not even be a possibility at all. And we see this when a worker collapses from a coughing fit. And Kaiji's just kind of ordered to help him take to infirmaries, you know, got him on his back, and he's like, God damn, man. And just the whole way there, the worker is begging not to be taken to the camp hospital. He just insists on the stretcher, just yelping about, like, he can still work. I can do this. Let me back out there, coach. Put me out there, you know. And when Kaiji reaches the infirmary, he finally understands the man's desperation. Because the sick room, the infirmary might as well just be a graveyard. And there's a really cool part, and I got it here written down. The narrator describes it best here. He really does. And I quote, "Laid out before him was a hell within hell. The end of the line. Lungs wrecked by dust. Bodies destroyed by slave labor. Damned souls suffering through their final hours." End quote. And we see this powerful scene where we see Kaiji and another worker, and we just see the infirmary dim. It's not even lit. People laying on mats. Some of them looking like they're dead on their back right there. And if the havoc of the labor wrecked upon these workers' bodies wasn't bad enough, Kaiji is told here by their workers that they have to pay for their own medicine. And of course, if you can't work, you know, you can't get paid. And so the vast majority who end up in the infirmary just die. They just die there. You know, they spend their last moments there. And working diligently doesn't really guarantee you paying off debt and achieving any semblance of freedom. So in all likeliness, most of the workers in the camp reach the end of their lives without even paying off half of their debt. And it just highlights a cruel system. And the thing is, it becomes even scarier when you realize that the system that Americans live with isn't all that different. Look, there was a 2009 study done by the Harvard Medical School that found that 45,000 Americans die annually directly because of a lack of health insurance. And the issue of health insurance and healthcare may be probably the most single defining topic for American millennials, you know, right up there, you know, with the economy. And the country has gone from passing to, you know, the Affordable Care Act back in 2010, to a lot of millennial voters right now supporting Medicare for All in 2020. But unlike America, Japan has universal health care, free at the point of service. But it's frightening how well Fukumoto's fictional vision of healthcare in this hell kind of just resonates so clearly with Americans that, you know, with Americans around the ages of you and I are facing and currently fighting to change in the year 2020, and for years before and years and prior. But Kaiji eventually escapes the work camp and clears his debt. But it isn't through his individual willpower or discipline and denying convenience store snacks and drinks and beer and all that stuff. It's him working with a group called the 45ers. And think back. You remember Occupy Wall Street? You know, remember the 1% versus the 99%? Sound a little familiar, right? And together with the 45ers and Kaiji, they take the fight directly to the system that's been exhorting them. And they walk away with enough money to Kaiji to not only escape and set off a journey to win, enough money to settle all their debts. But there's a gap between Kaiji and the legitimate world of employment and the world of the Taiyai group's games. In the outside world, Kaiji's looked at as a hopeless bum. You know, at best, he's a minimum wage convenience store clerk. And in that first episode, the loan collector Endo gets a read on him that really cuts deep. I think I got that quote right here too. I think Endo says, and I quote, "You feel like garbage every day, don't you? Powerless, degraded, non-productive," end quote. But Kaiji's gambling reveals that he's worth a lot more than that. We see that he's virtually unmatched in willpower, tactical thinking, emotional intelligence. And he uses all these skills, and it's enough to not only save his life, but save the lives of his peers in numerous occasions. But even still, it's unfortunately, it doesn't translate to gainful employment. It's subtle and just a powerful message about one's true worth not being measured by their, you know, economic success. Kaiji just isn't some story about a man playing extreme gambling games. It's part of it, though. It's really a story about a man who's a part of a generation who got the economic rug pulled right from under his feet, just along with his peers. About a narrow field of options and just a crushing prison of debt weighing heavy, just heavy on his spirit. But in the end, he manages to pull through. He does. And that's through uniting with those who share his same plight. And Kaiji's story of this anime manga is one that should resonate with American millennials like you and I. And just help us understand that their common plight, that are common plight as Americans and millennials, shares a lot of similarities with those people who were part of the large lost generation of Japan. And Japan's lost generation still to this day really from those effects in the times in the 1990s, decades later, right now. And things really aren't looking so hot in America right now either. But yeah, that's another thing for another day. But Kaiji tells us we learn to stick together or hit our jackpot eventually. And, you know, there's some light at the end of the tunnel. Just like the show says, as Kaiji is celebrating with his buds, things are starting to look good. The show says the future is in our hands. Like, you guys need to check out Kaiju when you guys get the chance. It's a wonderful show, and even a more incredible manga. And it's just so many things you can learn, and it's so many things people who are our ages can relate to, and which I makes it think is one of the greatest series. Just in not only just anime and manga, but just in fiction. But we'll move on from that. We'll be a little more lighthearted. Hated to start off the show such a sour note. But on the other side, we're gonna get into, like I said, some more manga. I'm gonna talk about the Ghost Time Paradox manga, meeting its unfortunate end in Shonen Jump, and we're gonna get to one of my favorite segment is just the weekly manga corner, where I tell you what's worth reading, what's worth your time in weekly Shonen Jump, and what's not worth your time. 'Cause I got some interesting things to talk about. But that'll be on the side. After some music, we're gonna bump out to some music at the end here, and put in some ads, and then stick with me on the other side so we can get some manga discussion. And thank you. Hey, yo, what's up, everybody? Welcome back. It's Weebcast Radio. Alright, let me stop. You ain't trying to hear me sing. You ain't here for that, right? You're not here for me to hear me sing, right? That ain't why we here. Like I said, I'm gonna get into some more manga. I hope you guys enjoy the first half of the show. Talking about one of my favorite series of all time, Kaiji. The gambling anime and manga. But we're keeping it moving. We're keeping it pushing. And I'm gonna be talking about Time Paradox Ghost Rider. And it's unfortunate and confusing ending that it saw in the latest issue of Weekly Shonen Jump. Excuse me. It's one of those mangas that I've been reading. Where I was watching pretty closely. I'm pretty sure I even did the first chapter. I reviewed the first chapter on a Weekly Manga Corner on one of these episodes months ago when it premiered. But Kenji Ichima's and Sunehiro Date's Time Paradox Ghost Rider came to an end in this week's issue of number 39 of Weekly Shonen Jump. Coming in only at 14 chapters in total, Time Paradox Ghost Rider's ending no doubt came to a surprise, not only to me, but just a lot of English readers. But those in Japan probably had a little inkling and probably had an idea more of it. Closer idea to about it than us readers in America. And this is because since day one, Time Paradox Ghost Rider has been a controversial series domestically for Weekly Shonen Jump. And I mean that for the Japanese readers. The idea of the protagonist Sasuke stealing another person's work and passing it off as their own, no matter the reason why, never really sat well with Japanese audiences as the Amazon review show. So like I said, I hopped on Amazon reviews in Japan, Japanese website, and went through some of the customer reviews, both of the star ratings and just the and the written reviews. I couldn't, like I said, I know some people who know a little bit more Japanese than I do. And, you know, with all the free systems we have out and for translating it, I can only do so much. But at the time of this recording, the customer ratings for the Time Paradox Ghost Rider Volume 1 sat at about 41%. 41% 5-star, 34% 1-star, 10% 2-star, respectively. Although 5-stars are in the majority, but it's the difference between that and the lower scores show that the opinion is pretty much polarized, as if I can freaking speak. But looking at, like I said, I looked at some of the texts of these reviews themselves, and we kind of get a closer indication of how that, as to how the audience reception played a hand in Time Paradox's Ghostwriter's ending. This is one of the 1-star reviews from Budae-chan that I got from, this is from August 4th, and I picked this one out because I thought it was particularly brutal. Let me get it out for you. Time Paradox Ghostwriter leaves a bad taste in your mouth. Protagonist is nothing but excuses to preserve the series' interesting concept, setting, and philosophy. All of the characters also only exist for his benefit. The title says it all. Concept and plot is fairly interesting. And one of those time paradox stories where the heroine has to be saved from certain death. You have to find these and jump, but they can be kind of cool. However, this series ends up wasting this interesting setting with a protagonist full of excuses attempting to justify his actions. And the heroine is only used for plot convenience. The editor is also useless. An issue of Jump from 10 years in the future appears and a protagonist is mistaken it for a dream. Publishes it as in Weekly Shonen Jump, as it is in Weekly Shonen Jump. He learns that later that this is plagiarism, but figures that he has a duty to continue publishing it now that he has put it out into the world. More like he didn't want to let the realization that he was plagiarizing get in the way of his chance of getting a serialization. Still, he attempts to pass himself as some sort of Jesus figure, shouldering the knowledge of his sin, and even refuses to use any of the money that he earns from the series. What on earth were the money lenders who believed in him and lent him money thinking? And then he goes and makes things even worse by saying that continuing the series that he stole is somehow his fate. How on earth can you like a protagonist who continues to hurt himself while constantly trying to show off just how tortured he is? The editors and the heroine just continue to act in a way that is convenient to Sasuke without reapproaching him. You have to wonder what's the point of the mangaka having editors is. It's a pity to think that if the author had managed to create a protagonist with one single redeeming quality, then this series might have been just all right. Fucking ouch. God damn, Budae-chan. Coming at this series neck, bro. Not with a knife. Fucking axe. God damn. I mean, and the thing is, such an opinion is kind of fairly respective of the majority. Because there was another user from August 4th, same day, called it a nothing manga, chastising it as exactly the same kind of empty manga that they talk about in the story. Like, god damn. They are holding. And it was other reviews that I was reading that had the same exact kind of feeling. Clearly, the idea of having Sasuke pass off a story from the future as his own has made readers very uncomfortable. But nevertheless, as the first review shows, this was not the only problem contributing to Time Paradox Ghostwriter's ending. Because readers were willing to give it the benefit of the doubt at the beginning due just to the interesting premise it had. Like I said, I think I said on the show when I talked about the first chapter, it was a mix of Steins Gate and Bakuman. And if you liked any of this series to any capacity, then you were probably going to like that first chapter of Time Paradox Ghostwriter. But how it developed, how this premise developed later on, was where things starting to come undone. That's why I was like, you know what? Some closer inspection is needed here. So I was like, let me dive a little bit deeper into this. Basically, on to the point where did this manga where did it go wrong for a Time Paradox Ghost Rider and its ending? See, the focus of many of the reviews is the characters. And it's primarily focused on the protagonist, Tepe Sasuke. And this is surprising that Sasuke appears quite relatable in the series. You know, in the series' opening chapter, in his mid-20s, down on his luck, struggling to achieve his dreams. It's an archetype that a lot of readers relate to, you know, not only for myself, but also for people who are listening to Weebcast right now. And, you know, Kaiju number 8, another series, has recently drawn extensive praise for using the same exact character type. But even so, it really all comes down to development. And no matter how relatable Tepe Sasuke is, or appears to be at the beginning, without sufficient development, it just kind of becomes fuck all. It's just kind of meaningless. And the problem is that, as the, kind of the first, as Buda-chan expertly roasted, and I mean pointed out, after a while, he quickly becomes a walking excuse for the plot. Instead of grappling with the consequences of his plagiarism, he rationalizes it and kind of places himself at the service of the time travel story. And that is precisely the exact opposite of how you craft living, breathing, and relatable characters, you know, which is the heart and soul of any good piece of fiction, of any story. And it reminds me of one of the pages where you have Sasuke looking dead on it, dead on at you, and we have some thought blocks pieces. And I have one of these pictures pulled up on the Viz Media Shonen Jump app. And he says, like, or he said, I think it's an inner monologue. He's like, I have to draw with this cross of guilt weighing on my back. I have to bring it forth into the world until the story reaches its end. That is kind of weird. It's kind of, how do I say it? It's tone deaf in a way. Is that a good way to put it? It's just tone deaf. And reading these reviews, it kind of makes sense why a lot of, domestically, this manga rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. And, like I said, obligatory, unprofessional sip of water. Sorry. Just had to. Very sorry. But beyond just Sasuke, there's just not a lot of characters worth talking about. Even Aino, who's supposed to be the series' secondary protagonist, turns out to be more than just a plot device, more than anything else. She enjoys no agency outside of Sasuke and finds herself trapped in a fate that she just can't overcome. To a certain extent, we still care about her, you know, due to her cute and really good design. You know, and I give big props to Sunehiro Date's art, because most of it, his art in this series is damn good. But this is once more just surface level. Character development aside, you know, Time Paradox Ghost Rider's biggest draw was undoubtedly its intriguing presence, like I stated before. In this regard, we really have to give author Kenji Ichima some credit, because Time Paradox Ghost Rider is probably the most interesting idea for a story to come out in Weekly Shonen Jump in a good while. Yet, that idea means nothing if you can't really properly put it into practice. For some reason, Time Paradox Ghost Rider shifts very early on to become like a production drama along the lines of Bakuman or Shirobako. And this occurs around the end of chapter 4, I believe, when Aino becomes Sasuke's assistant, being faced with the shortcomings of his own artistic ability, and he's kind of forced to undergo a sort of training arc to match up to the quality of Aino's White Knight from the future. And the problem is that this isn't achieved in a very interesting way. Instead of explaining how Sasuke might improve his artwork, the series simply shows us several scenes of him shouting and supposedly going beyond his limits to match up to Aino. Sure, I mean, it looks cool, but it's hardly compelling writing once you kind of dig into it for more than a second. And perhaps because how poorly this development was received among Weekly Shonen Jump readership, Time Paradox Ghost Rider shifted gears very quickly three chapters later, in chapter 7, when it just introduces more plot elements explaining that Sasuke had to beat Aino's White Knight from the future in order to save her from the fate of death. And at this point, it becomes increasingly hard to see where the author Ichima's shortcomings began, and the threat of cancellation kind of creeps in here. Because if Ichima had already been told at this point that Time Paradox Ghost Rider was going to be ending, which would not be exactly unsurprising given just the poor reception on the readership, then it stands to reason that he would be forced to develop the plot a little earlier and at a faster rate, because that axe was, you know, getting so close to his neck. And this development, most of the development in particular, just feels like a deus ex machina. But still, the faults of Ichima's writing towards the beginning of the series, shifting gears so rapidly from one element to another, and subverting character development into plot development, make it clear that even if he was given more time, things probably wouldn't have turned out any better. You know, because it would have been because of his own story shortcomings that he was given this notice. The blame lies, therefore, entirely with him and just him alone. And I should bring up, I think this serves as a pretty decent warning. I think this is a good warning for Shonen Jump. Because by the time of Time Paradox Ghost Rider's ending, proper had rolled around, many fans were already checked out. Sasuke being trapped in a time loop felt like a rehash of the series' early training arc. And questions such as who was sending issues of Weekly Shonen Jump from the future were left unfavorably unanswered. Truly, Time Paradox Ghost Rider had all the hallmarks of a series out of time. Quite ironic, due to the series' pretty interesting concept. But even understanding the series' faults, however, you know, but it would not be enough to understand why Time Paradox Ghost Rider met with such a sudden ending. After all, the series' first volume had been selling better than Mori King, another series that was launched around the same time as this. It is still ongoing. In this sense, we need to understand just the sheer amount of backlash that the series has faced both in the magazine and as a collective issue. Volume release, I mean. But hopefully, this series, and hopefully this podcast and this show help to explain at least some of that here. But for our part, and for Pete here, I just hope that the Time Paradox Magmonious ending doesn't do is convince Shueisha and Weekly Shonen Jump that time travel stories or series that deal with implications of plagiarism are a no-go. Because time travel can be extremely interesting, confusing, but interesting. And constituting some of my favorite stories in fiction. You know, it has a lot of my favorite shows and manga and American and Japanese deal with time travel. I like it a lot. I like the thought of it. But I just hope that Shonen Jump doesn't shy away from these controversial topics and that we progress as a society. Rather, it is by discussing them, dissecting them, truly just digging deep into the matter like what we always do here at Weebcast. That's the name of the game. That we truly come to understand ourselves, you know, those around us, and just our wider culture. But for now, however, Time Paradox Ghost Rider ending stands as an interesting entry in the modern Weekly Shonen Jump canon. It kind of teaches us that shoddy storytelling and mixed messages, you know, you can provoke a pretty strong reaction from your domestic audience. And really, it's the idea of plagiarism that really riles up the Japanese audience. Exploring why that might be is beyond the scope of what I can do in a short time matter on this podcast episode. But I hope others just kind of contribute to the conversation. So I hope, tell me what you think about it on Twitter, on my Twitter, on my Instagram. But even though it's ended, Time Paradox Ghost Rider will not be forgotten anytime soon, because it stands as one of Weekly Shonen Jump's most controversial series in a long, long time. And could be worth checking out for that very simple reason. Just don't expect too much. But like I said, you can read if you want to read Time Paradise Ghost Rider for free on Viz Media's Shonen Jump app. Speaking of Shonen Jump, it's time. You know what time it is. It's time for the weekly manga corner, brought to you by C-Dub himself. One of my favorite segments to do on the show is the weekly manga corner, because I love watching, I still to this day, but I love reading manga. It's easier to do, it's easier to fit into my schedule, and it's a treat. It's just a simple treat to do. So that's what I like to do. I like to read, I'm serious when I say this, I read every single, for the past, ever since I've gotten the Viz Media Shonen Jump app, I read everything in every single issue of Weekly Shonen Jump for about a few months now. It's been around January of this year. So for a good bit now. And I was like, you know what, why not help people, you know, explore the entire issue of Weekly Shonen Jump week in and week out, and let people know what's actually worth their time reading. Now, you know what? And so that's what I do. On the Weekly Manga Corner, sit down with your boy, C-Dub, a.k.a. Mori, a.k.a. Chris, a.k.a. the Independent Variable, and listen to what I think is worth your time reading in the latest Shonen Jump issue. And today, we got a chapter one. Let's be excited for that. We got a chapter one. I love doing chapter ones, and that's part of the reason why I picked it on this week's weekly manga corner, because it's a chapter one. And if people who read American comics, issue ones are usually do really well. You know, like let's say there's a new Spider-Man title, a Spider-Man book. Usually issue one does really well, and people review it, they buy the hell out of it, because they want to know they want to know how this writer, how this artist is going to create a story off jump and see where things are going to go. And issue ones are always exciting. It's always exciting. That's why we have an issue one on today's weekly manga corner. As I take another unprofessional sip of water here. But let's, like I said, it's the ending of another week, which means only one thing, and that's Weekly Shonen Jump. Shueisha's legendary manga magazine has been releasing every week for 50 years at this point, and it still has enough exciting series in it, in its roster, to justify its hallowed status. Plus, with Viz Media now publishing the entire magazine in English, there's never been a better time to jump in. And in this weekly manga corner, your boy C-Dub will investigate the latest and greatest in the world of Weekly Shonen Jump, telling you what's worth your time and what's not. This week, I'm chatting Phantom Seer Chapter 1, Chainsaw Man 82, and Hard Boiled Cop and Dolphin Chapter 8. Let me start off with, and like I said, this isn't really related to Weekly Shonen Jump, but I do have to bring up, I think I talked about it on my live show earlier this week, but the news of the passing of Kosei Ikuchi over the weekend was saddening not only to me, but for a lot of people, of his peers and people and his readership. The young art, I think he died at 23, so just such an unfortunate and just young age. And the young artist only had started his Kimio Alive and Kodansha's weekly shonen magazine, and was on track for some great things. And to have him just snatched away from us at a young age of 23, just what, 3 years younger than myself, it feels like a just unimaginable huge loss. So while, you know, I'll be discussing a lot of Shueisha series from here on out, don't hesitate to check out Kimio Alive via Kodansha. And it's just the least of what I can do to keep his memory alive. But let's move on, because like I said, I have a chapter one series, Phantom Seer, which, and I think I talked about this on Twitter, because I was pretty excited about it, because I loved the look of it. When I saw the art, that first page, It looked interesting. Something about the main character, the white-haired main character, is kind of do something to me. I don't know. They just do something to me. But this latest round of new series continues this week with Phantom Seer Chapter 1. Following Burn the Witch's highly anticipated but decisively low-key debut last week, yet unlike Burn the Witch, this series is sticking around for the foreseeable future, meaning that it definitely merits some closer inspection. If we're going to be getting this for, you know, actually going to be getting it longer than Burn the Witch, which is only, like I said, going to get 4 chapters. I think it's worth it. You might be seeing this, you might be hearing Phantom Seer more on the show in the future. But heading into this first chapter of Phantom Seer, two things gave me a fair bit of excitement. Firstly, the series is based off a one-shot from last year that won first place in the Golden Future Cup. Also titled Phantom Seer or Honomeru Shonen, The Barely Visible Boy in Japanese. It brought together Togo Goto on story and Kento Masuda on art. The last name, in turn, they sound a little bit familiar because Masuda also did the art for last year's Tokyo Shinobi Squad, which evoked some worrying themes while maintaining consistently really solid and cool art style. The second thing that got me excited was the prospect of that Masuda might finally be able to find a story to match the quality of his art, unlike Tokyo Shinobi Squad. But god damn it, he picked the short straw again. Because for the most part, Phantom Seer Chapter 1 is pretty unremarkable. It follows the story of a Riku Ibetsu, a high school girl who has some sort of psychic power that allows her to detect an imminent danger. And she ends up coming into contact with Iori Katanaki, the white-haired fellow. A mysterious boy who tells her that she's been haunted by a phantom. And fast forward a couple plot developments later, and the two are battling it out against spirits in a style that kind of reminds me of Shaman King, or, you know, in a little bit. But immediately, however, Phantom Seer Chapter 1 is confronted with a problem. And there have already been quite a supernatural series in Weekly Shonen Jump as of late, so even if we discard concluded series such as Bone Collection or Mitama Security, and recently the debuted Ayakushi Triangle from Yabuki Kentaro, touches on very much the same notes that Phantom Seer touches on. Riku even attracts spirits, just as Suzu attracts Ayakushi. Nevertheless, you know, I was willing to give Phantom Seer a chance here. Being Chapter 1, I get excited. I want to jump right into it and see what we're dealing with. So I gave a lot of benefit of the doubt. But pretty quickly, however, some of the things rubbed me the wrong way already. You know, firstly, the character of Iori isn't really likable. I get that's supposed to be the point, but I wasn't able to find any charm points among the aloofness and egotism about him. Secondly, it's kind of hard to see where things might develop here on out. There's the mystery of Iori's older sister, but the whole thing kind of feels like a rehash of the original one-shot, so it's hardly an exciting shot, almost kind of a la Chapter 1 of Burn the Witch. But to be honest, I was pretty clocked out for majority of Phantom Seer 1, you know what I mean? I was already kind of hit the snooze. That is until the character of Onyoki appears. And this is Iori's phantom. And that he unleashes at the very end, coming straight out of the most nightmarish regions of Japan's mythology. You know, his dark, terrifying appearance just kind of provided a greatly needed wake-up call for what was otherwise a pretty boring story so far. Even so, this poses a lot of problems. You know, for starters, having the majority of your debut chapter being quite unengaging isn't exactly a very good look. And I can't help but think that this is just setting up the exactly same dynamic that plagued Tokyo Shinobi Squad. Just a mediocre story punctuated by occasional glimpses of just artistic greatness. But after all, it is Kento Masuda that he's doing majority of the heavy lifting here, and not really Togo Goto. Shueisha must see something here, because, you know, as they lauded the initial one-shot, but I'm just afraid I really don't see it. All I can see is a barely visible outline of something that's already crashed and burned before, and I'm not really sure if I want to go through that again. So, still, you know, things could get better from here on out, so just keep your eyes peeled, and I'm gonna be investigating it further for you guys, for the Weebcast fam. Don't you forget that. But next, I have one of my favorite series, and I think it's one of the greater series in Weekly Shonen Jump right now, and that's Chainsaw Man, because we're going to be talking about Chainsaw Man Chapter 82. Because any of the pain that I felt from reading Phantom Seer Chapter 1 was, surprisingly, nothing compared to the pain that I felt reading Chainsaw Man Chapter 82. To be honest, the past couple of chapters of Tatsuki Fujimoto series have been nothing but pure pain. Starting with Aki's death in 79, followed by Power's death in 81. At this point, reading Chainsaw Man is pure, just being, it's showing up my my pain pleasure side right now, because you either like being hurt or enjoy watching other people suffer, because either way, you're probably not in the right head, but you might as well join the club. Because Chainsaw Man Chapter 82 opens up with a line that is surely aimed at much of the readers, as it is the characters of the series. Denji's still reeling from the death of Power, and he asks Makima, "Am I dreaming?" Desperately hoping that that he's right. And then Makima responds with perhaps the most terrifying line, a cold-hearted laugh that is just delivered without dialogue and just without sound effects, just placing the emphasis on solely her writhing body and contorted facial expressions. To be honest, that picture spread, which may go down in as just its history, is one of the most brutal in Weekly Shonen Jump history. Seriously, there's nothing more insulting and more terrifying than someone laughing in the face of abject pain and tragedy. To an extent, it feels like Fujimoto is laughing at us through her. Chainsaw Man Chapter 82 also has some strong competition on the antagonist front this week. My Hero Academia, in particular, is continuing to show us how terrifying Shigaraki can be now that he's gotten his hands on All For One. Nevertheless, Chainsaw Man Chapter 82 has one more thing going for it. And the series of revelations that follow this brutal scene, recasting the whole series and just in a different light. After having a good laugh, Makima goes on to admit that everything that has happened in Denji's life up until this point has been part of her master plan. In order to break his contract with Pochita, she decided to make his life as happy as possible before breaking the whole thing down and making it impossible for him to ever really live a normal life. And it seems to have worked, you know, as well as Chainsaw Man Chapter 82 ends with Denji lying listlessly on Makima's couch. You just get a sense of dread from him, while Makima just kind of lives her life as if nothing's happened. As to why Makima would do this is not really quite clear yet, and there's something about the fact that Denji killed his father. Turns out what was behind that ominous door was the truth that did not kill himself. But there is clearly something that we aren't being told, something that's being held from us, you know? But why would Makima be interested in breaking Denji's contract with Pochita in the first place? I'd wager it had to do something with the fact that Pochita is actually the devil, you know, foreshadowed way, way, way back in Chapter 53, but that's still kind of early and kind of remains to be seen. But to be honest, that ongoing mystery is the only real thing that's keeping this series going at this point in time. By killing off most of the main characters, Tatsuki Fujimoto is walking the dangerous line between shock, horror, and outright disgust, though. But it's been walking it pretty damn nicely though so far. And it's very possible that some readers will give up on this series as a result if he continues to go that far. But of course, there's also the prospect of seeing how Denji manages to break out of Makima's control. But whether or not this happens is just another question entirely. So judging from Fujimoto's previous work, Fire Punch, he doesn't exactly do happy endings. Check that Fire Punch out too. Satisfactory ones for sure, but not really ones that leave you feeling quite, happy inside. Finally, we're going to head into Hard Boiled Cop and Dolphin Chapter 8 to end off the weekly, my weekly manga corner. After all of Phantom Scene Chapter 1's dark horror and Chainsaw Man's Chapter 82 intense drama, you'd be, like I said, I want to, this would be a nice palate cleanser of things. Last week, we finished off with some gag, I think I talked about a gag manga. At the end of my weekly manga corner last week, there's really no such dice this week, So Mori King was average, Mogu-chan was more the same, and Miya Roboco is back to his usual disconcerting antics. So I had to stick with Hard Boiled Cop and Dolphin Chapter 8 here to save the day, as it finally gets into his plot after 7 weeks after just mucking about. It must be said that I've been quite enjoying Hard Boiled Cop and Dolphin as of late. Perhaps it has to do something with like its 2000s era idiosyncrasies, or maybe it has to do something with the tropical setting of it, but either way, it has me liking it. And Ryuhei Tomura has managed to craft something that has gone beyond its unfortunate political connotations. We ain't gonna talk about that, and becoming something genuinely entertaining. So, props to you, Tamura. There's this point where we get to see the main characters both looking on, and they both say "about time." And I was like, you know what? Yeah, it's about time this series gets into its main plot. We've known about the concept for the overall plot of Hard Boiled Cop and Dolphin for a while now, but Chapter 7 is really the first time that it's put into action. Samajima and Orpheus are interrupted in the middle of their ocean diving expedition from last week by a sudden call. It's from Section 7, a super secret agency within public safety that no one knows for sure really exists. And they have a mission for reluctant partners. Take down the Osawara family, an ocean gang that is threatening to disrupt peace on the tropical island of Onigashima. All this call in Hard Boiled Cop and Dolphin Chapter 7 really does confirm that we already knew, we already caught rumors of the so-called ocean gangs back in Chapter 2. And Orpheus has never really held back in hinting that there's a world beneath the ocean surface. Nevertheless, one other important thing to come out of this call relates to Samajima, Jingui. Jingui, the caller from Section 7, confirms that she was the one who got him sent to the boonies. And that if he wants to get out, he has to distinguish himself even more than Orpheus has. And this provides Samajima with a concrete goal in mind. Now we have a concrete goal for Samajima, which is something that's been sorely lacking up until this point in this story. But furthermore, Hard Boiled Cop and Dolphin Chapter 7 jumps straight into the implications of this revelation by getting Orpheus and his partner to take on the antagonistic gang members, who are actually anthropomorphized sea creatures thanks to the power of Chika. A lot of stuff to take in, but it's also necessary for plot development, so I'm kind of letting this go. Whether or not Hard Boiled Cop and Dolphin Chapter 8's plot development does anything for the series prospect is sort of an open question right now. While I haven't seen so much criticism beyond the slightly insensitive political nature of the first chapter, I haven't much praise either, but what I worried is that Ryuhei Tomoda's name might keep things ticking for a little bit longer. But before the series comes to a magnanimous end, in the same vein of, you know, Samurai 8. But we'll just have to wait and see. But you can read Phantom Seer Chapter 1, Chainsaw Man Chapter 82, and Hard Boiled Cop and Dolphin Chapter 8 for free in Viz Media's Shonen Jump. But thank you. Ooh, thank you. Thank you. Felt so good. I hope you guys enjoyed this edition of CW's Weekly Manga Corner. And I hope you guys go back to those series and read them, because I think they were some of the better chapters of this week's issue number 39 of Weekly Shonen Jump. And I'm hoping issue 40 this coming Sunday, Monday, kind of gives us a better crop of chapters, because I wasn't really quite impressed. But I hope this manga corner was entertaining for you guys, because as it was entertaining for me to write and record, as much as the rest of the episode of today's episode. But that will do it for me. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you for supporting the show that you guys have been doing over this last month and a half. Really been really, really big. Like I said, please keep supporting the show by listening, sharing with your friends and family. Keep sharing it with the weebs that you know on Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, wherever you guys may be. Tell them about the number one anime manga show on the internet, Weebcast, with its host, C-Dub. And like I said, follow me on Twitter at BaySenpai, follow me on Instagram at WeebcastTV, and even more importantly, support the show if you can. Please support the show, because now you can do so officially on the show's Patreon, on patreon.com/WeebcastShow. I'll be posting it on my social medias. I'm going to have to put it into my descriptions of these episodes now as well, so you guys can be able to get right onto it. So it'd be a lot easier, like I said. So, very much appreciated for listening to this episode. It's been a treat. Get ready for some cool things in the future. Next week, shoujo episode. Shoujo genre episode. I'm still debating whether it's going to be two parts, but we'll see. But that's next week. You'll be getting at least part one of my shoujo episode. And then the week after, if it's not a part two of the shoujo episode, you'll be getting my Tokyo Ghoul retrospective. I haven't done one since the Bleach one. And I'm going to talk about Tokyo Ghoul, its manga, its anime, its place in history, the importance of it, give you my official Weebcast score, talk about my favorite moments, my favorite characters, and all that good stuff, and kind of see where it places in history, like I did with the Bleach retrospective, and that's going to be awesome. And then later into the future, also, I'm going to be doing my fall anime 2020 preview, which I cannot wait to do, because there's so many things I really want to talk about. I was looking at the fall schedule, and it looks pretty chock full. You know, I think it's going to be better than the summer one. The summer one's been kind of light, even though there's been some good series. It's nowhere compared to the greatness that I think we're going to get in October and beyond for the fall schedule. So you're going to be getting that a little bit later on in the month of September as well. So I think that's about it. That's enough house cleaning. You guys have a lovely rest of the morning, afternoon, evening, or night. Thank you for allowing my voice into your ears, into your homes. I'll be back next week with another great episode. And if you ever want to become a guest on the show, hit me up on Twitter or Instagram, and you can be on the show if you like. We can talk about some cool stuff, so that'd be awesome. But this is Weebcast number one anime manga show, and I'm C-Dub, your host, and I'm Audi 3000. Goodbye.